Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's L.A. Steele. Tonight we're a night of spirituality here. Some nights I'm not quite as spiritual as other nights, I guess. I should say not quite as prepared. My topic tonight is a little different than usual. I think I'm going to. I thought of doing tarot reading tonight for anybody who'd like to call. I wasn't certain if I was going to do that, but for some reason, I have a feeling that somebody out there may want a tarot card reading. If you do, please give me a call. 646-915-9505. I'm willing to do that whenever you're ready, or whoever wishes to do it. I've been kind of on a odd journey recently. Had a few interesting things happen that I'm not sure I fully understand yet, but I keep feeling a strange connection to people lately. I'm not really sure I understand why. Something has something to do with what I'm reading, probably. Not eating, but reading. Kind of understanding the connectivity that we all have to one degree or another. And I'm not certain if I can put my finger on it exactly, but as I read more and more, for instance, study a little more about unity consciousness and possibly ascension consciousness and where we all are supposed to merge into one kind of consciousness. I guess what I'm getting at is I find myself either becoming more compassionate or more absorbed with human affairs and individuals as well, more so than I have been for most of my life. And I'm not really sure I understand why that is. Maybe it has something to do with maturity, but overall, there seems to be a need in all people to reach out to other people, to communicate with other people. And I'm not really sure why that is. It's just part of our nature. Some people have it more than others. I pity the person who can, I really do, who is reclusive and doesn't talk to anybody except themselves, well, maybe or some invisible friend. But I find that I'm happiest during the course of a day when I'm interacting with other people, dealing with things, you know, during the course of the day. And so I guess that that really, I never really looked at it from that perspective until I started to read Rumi and, you know, so many of these people that these thinkers that we've read over the last 2 years now, over 2 years on the show. But I've got into a book this week that has kind of surprised me a little bit. I've read this stuff so many times over the course of my life. I think I read this when I was in my 20s, the first time I read anything to do with Napoleon Hill. And I think I had his Laws of Success. And then I went into, Think and Grow Rich, Think and Grow Rich was his best-selling book. It was a great book, great stuff in it. I was a real estate salesman, mortgage broker, real estate broker and mortgage broker for 20 years, and I've been in sales for that. There was so much that I was taught by Napoleon Hill, reading his books and other great salesmen. But I came across this other book a couple of years ago, and Napoleon Hill again. But Succeed and Grow Rich Through Persuasion, and a good part of it is written by Clement Stone as well. As a collaboration. It's a unique book in the sense that Clement Stone is he was the chairman and founder of Combine Insurance Company, I believe, still exists today. He created a mega company and made billions of dollars for himself. Extremely wealthy man. And he also became a philanthropist. But he hooked up with Napoleon Hill only because it was because of Napoleon Hill influence in his early days that it was in the early days that he was able to, when he first read Napoleon Hill's works, that allowed him to understand the basics that he needed in order to create the company and the work that he did and build that huge fortune. And he gave back in many ways, and one of them was to work with Napoleon Hill on this book. Excuse me. There's many, many techniques that he goes into and really tries to create create the foundations of successful thinking. And there are so many useful techniques. For instance, the power of the subconscious mind and the need for change in your lifestyle, and what to do steps toward harnessing the mind's potential. And I thought I'd start here in this piece, and then go into the power of your thoughts. This portion of the chapter, and try to create understanding of this. It's an excellent chapter, by the way. I don't know if I'd be able to. This goes into so many things: power of accurate thinking, power of desire and motive. But I'm going to start here and see how far we get tonight. We can do it. And We might be able to get through this. I want to start here. I'll tell you everything. Anywhere you start in this book is a new start. It says here, the power of applied faith. Nothing great has ever been achieved without the aid of a positive mental attitude, which begins with a definite purpose, activated by a burning desire for the attainment of that purpose, and intensified until the desire becomes applied faith. Wishes are not burning desire, because everyone has a flock of them. Idle curiosity often inspires one to action. But it generally leads to a dead-end street without benefiting anyone. Hopes are helpful, but most people live out their lives on hopes which never materialize, because hope is not enough to inspire action based on definiteness of purpose. Burning desire is a combination of wishes, idle curiosity, and hopes, and no one ever succeeds in the upper brackets of achievement without the urge of this action-impelling state of mind. Applied faith is a state of mind which can exist only when the mental attitude is positive. It is the power that opens the door to successful thinking. Applied faith is a concentration of all of the one's wishes, hopes, and desires, so intensified that they inspire one to begin the pursuit of his aims and purposes in the belief that they will be attained. Applied faith permits us to look into the future and justify our purpose is founded upon fire becomes a prayer. Look about you and you will see the world's most successful people are those who recognize and use their capacity for faith. However, this power is not to be flicked off and on like an electric current. It must be nurtured and strengthened through everyday use. This is interesting in that we know that great success, financial success, if you will. And everybody seems to equate success to financial success, and not I particularly don't, but abide by that rule, because success can be equated to the point, and we'll get into this in this book, because it states that success is where your needs are met. Success is where your life is at a peaceful state. Success is in relationships with good friends and loving families and, you know, good health, things like that. Those are far more important than money, because if you have those and you have faith, then you have the possibility of creating wealth, just as you apply it to whatever you do, or you apply your attention to whatever you do, and the amount of wealth that you'd require, the way that you require it, if you sit around waiting your life for a lotto ticket to win, who knows? You might make it with enough positive thinking, but at the same time, you spend a whole lot of time and money at it. But at the same time, if you don't buy the ticket, you know as well as I do that you have no shot of winning. Okay. I bring up a lotto only because I when I was maybe probably 20 years ago, I won a second prize in the lotto, Connecticut lotto. I won about $1,500. It wasn't very much, but the fascinating thing about how I won was that I picked those numbers based on the based on the history of what numbers picked. I actually did some studying and researched the a year's worth of numbers that came up in the lotto, and I found that these six numbers had a tendency to come up more often than any other numbers. So what I did is I played them, and I played them in different sequences. So, and I thought, well, maybe this, and I had a good feeling about this. I said, I think this might work. And I remember playing it at numbers, and I remember choosing each particular number based on the feeling I had, the gut feeling that I had, and as well, that these numbers were correct. And the funny thing was about when I got that is I had a toss-up between number 36 and number 38. And what bothered me is as I put in 36, I remember the number as the final number, and then I made out another card, another ticket, and chose the number with the number 38. But what I did is I altered another one of the numbers for another hunch number that I had. So what happened was is that five of the first six numbers I chose on the first ticket all came up. Boom, 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 boom. And I missed the sixth number, which was worth $3 million, by the number 36 instead of number 38 that I had chosen in the other John. And had I taken the same number sequence that I had and just went with a 38 instead of a 36, then I would have won the $3 million. But the confusion lied where I missed out on that as well. So I got second prize and third prize on that. It was very, very bizarre. So anyway, I had four numbers that came up and five numbers that came up. So, of course, after I tried to redo it again, the same way, thinking, well, maybe I could win again. So I remember instead of investing $1 or $3 or whatever I had spent, I then went back in the following week and I did the same thing based on the same thought, but this time with a little more confidence that I thought my system would work, right? So I invested $20 in different combinations to make sure that I wouldn't lose if these numbers came up again, or that some similar numbers came up that I chose. And what happened was I won nothing. Everything that I chose the following week was, I think I made $3 maybe if I won anything. Well, not to be defeated, and still having a few dollars left in my pocket from the other winnings, I decided, well, this time I would invest $10. Not a big spender, but $10 and do 10 numbers. 10 different number sequences that I felt. And I did it based the same way. I went back and used the same numbers, but generated the different numbers, some of the different numbers that came up in the recent weeks. And still having that strange faith in myself that this is going to work, I played it again. And I lost. None of the numbers came up. And so I figured, you know, not only was it just a fluke, but it was, you know, there was something wrong. I was doing the same thing, but getting different results. So the randomness of that had to be either something in my subconscious that was connecting to some other outer-worldly guidance, or it was just a fluke of luck, which I think, you know, now that I think about it, it was probably just a strange fluke of luck. But had I not picked those cards, had I not done the homework, had I not done that, had I not bought the tickets, I wouldn't have won the money. So essentially, you can try and try and keep trying and maybe you win. But you can't keep doing the same thing over and over and over again expecting different results. You know, it's not going to happen. You're going to get the same results. So you have to have a plan, winning the lotto or doing whatever you're going to do. And you have to have a true sense of determination and to fulfill whatever plan that is. And but first of all, you have to have a plan that's going to make sense and that where the odds are not so stacked against you that you're going to, you know, no matter what you do, you may not win. I mean, when if you're looking at a billion to one chance that you're going to win the lotto, that your number may come up, and that you happen to buy it, and that you happen to, on that time, and you happen to be at the right place at the right time at the right moment, and, you know, some people are, but, again, putting all your money on that gamble that it's you, you know, it's hard to say, it's hard for me to do that anymore. Unless I put, if I put my money on anything, it's on myself going forward with a plan of action to achieve something that I need to or that I want to achieve, something that I know I have a much better chance than a billion to one to win, you know, for it to come true. But essentially what this book says is that that billion to one is possible. But it's only possible with a positive attitude and a positive mental attitude, positive actions, and positive thinking. And if you have the positive attitude, say, I'm going to win this. You go out and the action that you take is buying the ticket. And the research that you've done is try to create some kind of a logical sequence of numbers that might have a possibility of hitting, then that increases your chances of winning rather than just a random shot, you know. And of course, nobody can buy a million tickets. I mean, a guy could buy a million tickets and never hit one. So, you know, you can't outbuy the lotto. And at the same time, you can't outbuy the... you have to have some strategy. So... anyway, that's where applied faith comes in. You have to have faith in yourself, faith in what you're doing, but you can only have that faith based upon your experiences and not just throw it to the wind and say, you know, I have faith that one day I'm going to be king of the world. Well, you know, what are you going to do to be king of the world? Fears that can paralyze us. What strange fears invade the mind of men, the minds of men, and short-circuit their approach to that master power which can lift them to great heights of achievement? How and why do the vast majority of people become the victims of a negative hypnotic rhythm which destroys their capacity for the use of the power of their own minds? Too often people let fear, the negative power, rule all their decisions and actions. Their every yearning is for a sort of overall protection summed up in the catch-all cliche of security. The truly successful person doesn't think in these terms. His reasoning is based on creativeness and productivity. As former President Eisenhower said, one can attain a high degree of security in a prison cell if that's all he wants out of life. The successful person is one who is willing to take risks when sound logic shows they are necessary to reach the desired goal. Again, let me repeat that. The successful person is one who is willing to take risks when sound logic shows they are necessary to reach the desired goal. All of us suffer from fear. What is it? Fear is an emotion intended to help preserve our lives by warning us of danger. Hence, fear can be a blessing when it raises its flag of caution, so that we pause and study a situation before making a decision or taking action. We must control fear rather than permit it to control us. And once it has served its emotional purpose as a warning signal, we must not permit it to intrude in the logical reasoning by which we decide upon a course of action. It's no different than if you light a match. Suddenly that match is the fire is hot and it's exciting to watch it flame up. But it's a useless flame if it's not used for something, either to light a fire, light a cigarette, or light something. It's a tool. It should be considered a tool, and it should be considered what it is and used for that purpose. And control any fear that we have a fire, you know, because it's not logical. Control the fears rather than permit it to control us. And once it has served its emotional purpose as a warning and signal, we must not permit it to intrude in a logical reasoning by which we decide upon a course of action. The famous statement from FDR's first inaugural address, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself," is as applicable now as when we spoke when he spoke it during the Depression. How can you overcome your fears? One of the best ways is to ask yourself bluntly, what am I afraid of? Often it turns out that we are shying at mere shadows. Let's examine one of the most common worries and see how this system works. Sickness. The human body is endowed with an ingenious system for automatic self-maintenance and repair. Why worry that it might get out of order? It is better to marvel at how it stays in proper working order in spite of the demands we place on it. Old age. The golden years are something to look forward to, not to fear. We exchange youth for wisdom. Remember, nothing is ever taken away from us without the equal or greater benefit being made available. I don't know if I could explain that to some poor Alzheimer's patient or something, but or somebody, you know, whose body's failing them or mind is failing them, but in all good faith, who knows if something greater is happening? You know, maybe forgetting the past and forgetting certain memories that cause pain or grief or discomfort is better for the body. Failure. Momentary failure is a blessing in disguise, carrying with it the seed of an equivalent benefit if we but seek to learn its cause and use our knowledge to better our effort on the next attempt. Death. Recognize that it is a necessary part of the overall plan of the universe, provided by the Creator as a means of giving man a passageway to the higher plane of eternity. Criticism. You should, after all, be your own most severe critic. What then can you fear in the criticism of others? Such criticism may include constructive suggestions that will help you better yourself. I've always encouraged criticism. I've always been critical. And I've always felt that, well, being critical, you deserve to have criticism. So I've never really taken it too personally. Of course, everybody's somewhat offended by personal criticism and attacks. But if you attack someone physically or verbally, then you have to expect to be attacked in some other way. Or by that person, you have to know that person will defend itself. And if you, I've been criticized publicly in the newspapers and television and so on. But I've always accepted that because I've always believed that that was part of the game. You know, part of the game of being a broadcaster to some degree, you got to expect you're going to rouse contempt or interest or something. And today, with the world being so as critical as it is and taking swipes at people at anything, it can only be expected. young person listening to this and somebody criticizes the way you look or the way you act or the way you, what you say or where you live or what you're wearing, or my God, there's a million ways that people can criticize you. Just shrug it off, because, you know, it's useless. That kind of criticism is useless, because if you're, I mean, if it's an outright attack against you, personal attack, like you're fat or you're lazy or you're ugly or you're, you know, you're a jerk or whatever it may be, people do that because they know that it can bother you, and those people that do attack you or attack other people, in themselves, probably have been attacked. They've been criticized. They've been hurt. They've been abused. So they know the feeling that it, what it's like to be abused. So they can abuse others that same way. And it takes a strong mind, a strong will to resist criticism. And the only way to do that is through self-criticism. Never take yourself too seriously. I find that when I take myself seriously, that's when I get into it. That's when I become indignant, you know, and I become, too self-absorbed. So I try not to take myself too seriously, and I try to always keep an open mind. But there are some issues that I have that I just cannot get by, and cannot be open-minded about. One of them is genocide. There's one thing that is an abomination. Another thing is corporate indifference and corporate manipulation of the environment and things the marketing and the mass manipulation and propaganda and so on. These things, when you know your mind is being teased and taunted and pulled in these directions, and you know they're wrong, but they're tantalizing, they're titillizing, you know, and they're so much of it is just bullshit, you know, just bull crap, just being thrown at you. Stuff they want you to believe, like stuff they want to believe, make you think that this really happening, and it's not. You know, like right now they build up the swine flu as a pandemic. Okay, oh, a pandemic, the swine flu. It's so 41,000 people have been affected by it, but there's only been 26 deaths or something around the world by this flu, and those people that have died had other issues that were, you know, complicated getting the flu. Their immune systems were down, way down, due to another reason. Either they had pneumonia or they had some other thing, and then the flu just picked it up. But the fears that they're trying to put out there now on this, and that, oh, the country's bankrupt, and oh, that this is well, and oh, that, oh, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. There are no more ideas. There's no way to save things. We might as well all go to Armageddon. It's like, oh, my God. Well, when you look at what's happening and you understand with a logical mind and look at and isolate these incidences and see which one, what is what, and how much corruption is involved in one or the other, how much rational thinking, how much good thinking, how much is truly... how can I say, how much is really real? You look at it, not a lot of it is. Right? And there's a lot of people out there spending your tax money, and a lot of people stealing your money, and a lot of people manipulating everything that you have, and the smart guy is sitting there going, what the hell is going on? You know, what the hell is happening here? Right? How can a credit card company increase my rates to 24% after they've been paying them, you know, for the last 20 years on time? How can these banks be foreclosing? Are these my 401k suddenly to be depleted? Who stole my money? How could there suddenly be billions and trillions of dollars and suddenly there's no, those trillions and trillions are gone? It's like they never existed. Well, where the hell did they go? They existed once. Chances are they went into somebody's pocket, all right? Somebody got it, all right? It wasn't you, it wasn't me. They took it out of our accounts. They depleted our accounts. They destroyed our values, okay? And somebody made the money. Who was it? It was the banking system in Wall Street. They made the money. Yes, they did. Those assholes that are sitting on $400,000 or $500,000 a year, $500 million a year bonuses and stock options and managers of hedge funds that are billionaires, you know, that are stealing this money from their own clients, and the clients are happily saying, oh, you know, here's $1 billion for you. Thanks for my 10% return, all right, which probably happen to be Ponzi schemes, most of them, all of them probably. And, you know, you have a duplicit government. You know, law enforcement agencies are corrupt. You have tons of these things. And these things you have to look at and say, well, how in hell is a guy like me supposed to wade through this swamp of crap, right? And I'll tell you, the only way that you get through it is by getting through it. Don't let any single thing bog you down. Rise above it. Rise above that. Rise above that crap. Float upon the methane clouds, if you will, and get the hell out of there, all right? And move on. You have the ability to do that. And a lot of you sitting back, I've already done that. You know you're away from that crap. You're away from the clouds. You figured it out. You might have figured it out. Or you're still looking for ways to figure it out. But, you know, one of the ways is I'm trying to give it to you tonight. How to deal with fear. Fear results mainly from ignorance. It also helps to consider every facet of what you fear. What are the risks? Is the expected reward worth taking them? What are the other possible courses of action? What unexpected problems are likely to be encountered? Do you have all the necessary data, statistics, facts at hand? What have others done in familiar situations, and what were the results? Once you have completed your study, take action immediately. Procrastination leads only to more doubt and fear. A noted psychologist once said that a frightened person, alone at night and imagining noises, can settle his or her fears quickly. All that is necessary is to put one foot on the floor. In doing so, one has taken the first step on a positive course of action toward overcoming fear. The person seeking success must force himself in the same way to control his fear with absolute faith by taking the first step toward his goal. And fear, the negative power of the mind, can be overcome if one will learn to draw strength and courage from the positive power that lies within each of us. How may one tap that power that comes from within? The answer is faith. Faith backed by action. Faith, rightly understood, is always active, never passive. Passive faith has no more power than the idle dynamo. To generate power, the machine must be set in motion. Active faith knows no fear, no self-imposed limitation. Reinforced with faith, the weakest mortal is mightier than the disaster, stronger than failure, more powerful than fear. The emergencies of life often bring men to a crossroads where they are forced to choose between avenues marked faith and fear. What is it that causes many to stumble down the road of fear? The choice hinges upon one's mental attitude, and the Creator has so arranged man's powers that each individual controls his own. A man with faith is a man who has conditioned his mind to believe. He has conditioned it, you know, a little at a time, by prompt and courageous decisions and actions in the details of his daily work. Conversely, the man who lives in fear does so because he has neglected to condition his mind to a positive attitude. And the next chapter is the need for change, and I'll get into that. But I wanted to just mention, if you have a fear, if you fear, like for instance, let's say you're sleeping and you have a nightmare and you know that it seemed real, and all of a sudden the alarm clock wakes you up and you're awake at 6 o'clock in the morning and you're sitting there laying there trying to discern reality from dreamland and from your dream and you suddenly take your step, jump, you take one step out of bed and put your foot on the floor and put the other on the floor. And then you're sitting at the edge of the bed and then you get up. Now that's faith. Now that is faith right there. That's faith that you, number one, know the difference between your dream and your reality. Number two, know that you, regardless of what you dreamed, you're up and you're ready to enter the new day, start the new day, whether you go to the bathroom or, you know, look at yourself in the mirror or brush your teeth or whatever you do, or you do the first thing in the morning. Personally, I usually go into the bathroom and have a cup of coffee and, you know, get ready for work. But that's, you know, that's a routine that we all have, and some change. But but what I'm saying is that faith each day is getting out of bed. The next step is doing what you have to do, either going to work or if you're involved with, it's all work related to one way or another. It's action related. Even if you're on vacation, you are action related, what you're going to do in something positive. Or even if you're going to just relax for the day, you know, it's action related, benefit related to you. And that's part of faith. That's faith. Now, if you have to get up and face your executioner, well, that's hard. I don't think I'd want to get out of bed for that. Okay, and I think I might have a problem with faith there. But at the same time, if my destiny were such that I had to face the executioner that morning, then by all means, as my last actions on earth, I would want them to be bold and brave. I would want them to be connected to a spiritual and a godly unity, so that when I did pass on, when I met my Maker, when my execution occurred, I would be ready to pass on to the next world and accept whatever method of death was my was to happen to me. But more so, we have a faith of getting up in each morning unless we die in our sleep. And I have proven that in my own life, seen it in other people's lives, that it's that action toward working each day, living each day in a way that you understand and you know, that gets you through it. And if you know that what you're doing during the day is making you happy, making you healthy, making you wealthy, making you wiser, then that is the path that you must take. That's the path that's right for you. You've gotten your path. You've found your path, whatever that path may be, all right, as long as it works for you. And I want to read this before we end tonight. The need for change. The real test of a man's belief in a positive mental attitude and of his faith is in the challenge of a change which he must meet every day of his life. One of the first requirements for enduring faith and success is a capacity to accept and profit by change. It has been said that the only permanent thing known to man is change. In order to preserve the faith which will give you power for the attainment of success, you must make yourself flexible enough to adjust to all types of change. If you are flexible, you will ride with the tide of change instead of going down under it. Consider the following suggestion and determine which, if utilized, would strengthen the power of faith you need each day. Change from the habit of thinking about and fearing the things you do not desire to the habit of believing you can and will make life pay off on your own terms. Change from the habit of thinking and talking of the physical ailments you may have or fear you will acquire to the habit of speaking and thinking of the perfect health you desire until you develop a health consciousness. And remember that imaginary ailments can do you as much harm as if they were real, if you accept them and encourage them by fear. Change from the habit of desiring more material things than you need and can use to the habit of sharing your riches so that they will serve others and thereby multiply themselves in your behalf. Change from the habit of self-satisfaction to the habit of positive discontentment sufficient to keep you searching for more knowledge and wisdom to make your life richer, both spiritually and materially. Change from the habit of intolerance to the habit of open-mindedness on all subjects toward all people, remembering that a closed mind doesn't grow, but atrophies and becomes powerless. Change from the habit of fault-finding to the habit of looking for the good in other people and letting them know that you have discovered it. It is true that people will see in you whatever you see in them, be it good or bad. And change from the habit of self-pity to the habit of facing facts about yourself and the real causes of your fears and worries. And remember that the looking glass will be helpful in making this change. Look in the mirror. And change from the habit of speaking disparagingly of others to the habit of praising them. For this is also a habit which will inspire reciprocation. While you are considering these suggestions, be sure to recognize the difference between your needs and your right to receive. We need many things which we have not earned the right to receive. The one sure way to obtain the right to receive is by going the extra mile, putting others under obligation to you by rendering more service and better service than that for which you are paid. And the great German philosopher Goethe set forth the following principles for having a well-balanced life. And those are: health enough to make work a pleasure, wealth enough to support your needs, strength enough to battle difficulties and overcome them, patience enough to toil until some good has been accomplished, grace enough to confess your sins and forsake them, charity enough to see the good in your neighbors, love enough to move you to be useful and helpful to others, faith enough to make real the things of God, and hope enough to remove all fears concerning the future. That was by God, and I agree with that. And everyone needs a blueprint by which to build his life. God's creed may give you the basis of one you can form for yourself, which will help you to make life pay off in your terms without violating the rights of others. A daily creed helps one to keep before him a clear picture of the person he desires to become. It helps to give him the power of faith to meet and overcome obstacles along the way. If you sincerely desire success, then you must enthusiastically search until you find the point of approach to that master power within you. When you find it, you will have discovered your true self and other self, that other self, which makes use of every experience of life. Success will be yours, no matter who you are or what may have been the nature and scope of your past failures. You must apply your faith. You must master your mind power and direct it toward your desired goal with enthusiasm. Emerson, the great American man of letters, well stated, "Nothing great is ever achieved without enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is an important trait of a pleasing personality. It is a necessary component of the success-desiring individual living in today's fast-paced world. And the great men of yesterday and successful men of today are men who defined their desires in terms of definite goals and applied and directed their powers of faith toward the achievement of those goals. Enthusiasm is not a patented or copyrighted trait of personality, but it can become a priceless asset to all who learn how to apply it and follow the habit in their daily relationship with others. To be enthusiastic, act enthusiastically. Realize that enthusiasm possesses its own unique power, for it is a combination of mental and physical energy. Enthusiasm is simply faith in action. It is this faith, your ability to believe, which is the greatest power in your mind, and which can be released and directed toward the achievement of your desired goal. The successful people of today and those who will become the successful people of tomorrow are those who have mastered and utilized the vast powers residing within their own minds." And I'm going to go on to the next subchapter here. The power of the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is a source of man's greatest power. It can be influenced to work toward desired goals, even while one sleeps, as well as during the waking hours. Although man has not yet learned to use the total power of the subconscious, he has learned to utilize what he does understand as a guide to the attainment of his goals. In a lifetime of research into patterns of success, we have studied the case histories of hundreds of leaders in many fields of achievement. One thing has impressed us during these studies: the way many of these highly successful persons use the power of their subconscious minds, especially in moments of extreme stress or of great decision. Woodrow Wilson, for example, followed the habit of writing out of a clear statement just before retiring, of which he wished to accomplish the following day. He would read it aloud several times and in his nightly prayer ask guidance for its fulfillment. And often he would awaken during the night with a complete solution in his mind. At other times, his desired answers never came. In discussing it in an interview with Dr. Hill, Wilson stated, "The state of mind in which I ask help from my subconscious seems to have much to do with the results. In times of great emergency under the stress of intense emotion, the guidance I need comes too quickly. If there is any doubt in my mind, I also find the result is generally negative. But when my belief is so intense that I almost feel myself in possession of the answer to my problems, then the result is always positive." Wilson was convinced that the subconscious mind is the gateway to the infinite intelligence of our Creator, and can be used effectively only through that mental attitude of complete belief known as faith. And when you harmonize your mind with that of the Creator, you gain guidance, power, revelation not available to you by any other means. In this way, your subconscious mind can help you achieve both material and spiritual security. I have to interject a little bit here, because based on historical fact. Wilson was not a great president under any circumstances. He got us into World War I, and he got us into the Federal Reserve, and he was just an absolute piece of work, this guy. But unfortunately, Napoleon Hill, who has passed away since, but Napoleon Hill was a man who had met all of these men, had spoken with the President Wilson, interviewed these men, and I believe to some large degree he was enamored by great men. You know, his life work was centered around that, and basically what he did was research this, the winning trend. traits of these men and what how they became so successful, the early industrialists and presidents and so on, in the 1900s and up until I believe he passed away, and I don't know when he passed away, but some time ago. But he was a great man and did the world a great service with his book. In fact, there was for a time, Think and Grow Rich was the second largest selling book in the world, next to the Bible. All right, so that's how important this man's work was, and still is. But in reading it, this book was written in 1990, I believe, and it's still in print. I picked it up a couple of years ago in a bookstore, new. So it's in its, I don't know how many hundreds of reprints that it's been in. But the name of the book, by the way, we discussed here is Succeed and Grow Rich Through Persuasion, Greatest Guide to Wealth and Happiness Ever Written, and by Napoleon Hill. And I think you should, I think you might want to pick up a copy of it if you can. It was only, I think, $6. Yeah. USA price $6.99, and I just bought this about a year or so ago. So I'm sure it's still for sale. It's a small pocket handbook, paperback. We've only got 2 minutes remaining, before we stop streaming, but the mind can be controlled, guided, and directed to ends of one's own choice. In fact, there are definite penalties if one fails to do so. The mind can attract unpleasant and undesired circumstances and will do so unless it is kept busily engaged in the attainment of that one's desires. And all of man's constructive achievements are the result of organized thought directed to definite ends and a positive mental attitude backed by belief. And the majority of thoughts that voluntarily enter the mind are not accurate. Therefore, all thinking needs careful analysis before any of it is accepted and acted upon as sound. And whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe it can achieve, it may do so by the application of natural laws and the established principles accepted by man as workable. And not one of these five facts regarding the use of the mind calls for extensive formal education. Each of them can be verified for its soundness by anyone who is interested in knowing the potential powers of his own mind. To aid you in learning to tap the unlimited powers of your suggestions, we present the following suggestions. And in here, they say they have six ideas on how to do so. The power of an open mind, the power of your thoughts, and he gets into a power of auto-suggestion as well, which is auto-hypnosis. So with that, I'm going to leave you tonight. I'm going to end the show, and I want to please invite you to join us tomorrow night at 8 o'clock when we have George Dixon on, and we'll be talking about the Anunnaki, I believe, and we'll be exploring other areas regarding the alien beings and their existence, or at least the legends and history of them, so that we, that we're not just talking through the top of our heads. We're giving you some real evidence and some places to search and research. And we hope you enjoy that. That's tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Join George Dixon and Lila and myself right here. And I want to thank everyone who's joined us tonight. I hope you got something out of that. And again, that's Succeed and Grow Rich Through Persuasion, Napoleon Hill. Get it at any bookstore. Borders, I think I got this one at Barnes & Noble or something one afternoon while I was browsing. So thank you, and have a pleasant evening. Good night.